You are one of the most savvy doctors about addiction, alcoholism, and mental illness that I've ever met. So I feel very grateful to be in a town that has someone like you who can represent the voice of authority for all practical purposes and a caring, compassionate one.
Well, that's to come to that point. I would much rather be the caring, compassionate one. That's what I'm about. Mm-hmm. I'm not about enforcement. I'm not about being draconian. I care about family units, and alcohol destroys family units. And that really, really worries me. And any initiative that I've made to try and address this has been around the family unit and trying to preserve the family unit, which I believe is the sacred building block of society.
So, Dr. Blair, I think a lot of times parents want to know, okay, well, how do I know my kid is in trouble with alcohol or drugs? And they'll say, they're doing sports, they have great marks in school, I think they're fine. When in reality, the kid happens to be very clever and can get by and maybe be functioning very, very poorly, and the parents miss it. What would you say they should be looking for as signs and symptoms?
You know, I think it comes down to the point that I've been trying to underline all along. The alcoholic damages his relation or his or her relationships with the people who love him. And if that is happening in a family, if alcohol is causing dysfunction in the individual and it's impairing his relationship with the people who really care about him, there's a problem. It's as simple as that. I don't think it depends on how much alcohol you're drinking. I don't think it depends on how well you can handle your liquor. It's not about that. It's actually about whether there's dysfunction related to alcohol caused by that individual. And I think blowing the whistle early is a good thing. Again, coming back to Marco Brocato's book, which I've referred to a couple of times already, he was really upset with the way he was treated by some doctors, for example. You made it very easy for him to get prescription drugs because he was actually addicted to prescription drugs as well. And he said, you know, if somebody had just had the guts to say to him, no, I'm not doing this, you're not getting a script from me, you'd have probably reached a level of insight a little bit earlier. Maybe, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe he could have. So I actually think it's a role that healthcare professionals in the community have an obligation to fulfill, is to actually be the whistleblower at times. And when you see that there is dysfunction in a family, it's like, okay, what's causing that? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem? And very often it turns out that substance abuse is the underlying problem.
So really, I think that sums it up. It doesn't matter whether you drink every day. It doesn't matter if you don't drink for 2 months and binge drink on the weekends. If it's affecting your personal relationships, it's a problem.
That's exactly how I feel.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it. Thank you so much for being our guest today. I've certainly learned a lot. I appreciate your insight and sharing what you know about, especially about our community and kind of where things are headed. So I would like to give out your phone number. Dr. Mark Blair's office number is 015-793-0606.
Indeed.
And also, Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous is here in Hood Sprate, believe it or not. And you can go on the Facebook pages to find that.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity that you've afforded me, Lisa.
Thank you. I hope you'll come back and tell us some more.
Indeed, I will. Thank you very much.
Our thanks again to Dr. Mark Blair for being the first guest on Daring Parenting on Hood Sprate FM 96.4. And we expect Dr. Blair will be back with us again on Daring Parenting very soon. This is Lisa Henderson on Hood Sprate FM 96.4. And our second portion of Daring Parenting is going to be a discussion about what are natural and logical consequences. And we've also taken some questions from parents in the Hood Sprate area. We have a panel of experts, and I have to say, one of the best resources that we have for our experts are children, teens, and young adults, because they actually tell us what worked for them and what doesn't work as far as consequences and some of the mistakes that parents make. And believe me, I've made a few. So one of our first questions is how to build self-esteem without making your child become arrogant. Self-esteem and self-image are two different things, and one of the most important things that I've learned that children can have is a good self-image, and with that will come good self-esteem. I think one of the most important things that you can do is starting children young, even if they're 2 years old, 3 years old, all the way up until they're, you know, if they're still living in your house, they need to be doing this. It's chores, not getting paid for certain chores, but chores as being a member of the family. Like, this is what we do to function as a family. For example, if you're in the kitchen and you're fixing dinner, and your child says, I want to help, or they don't want to help, and you say, come here, could you please hand me this? You can start that with little children. Now, of course, they can't do a whole lot. They might be able to stir something, but it gives them a sense of responsibility. It gives them a sense of contributing and a sense of being an integral part of the family. So when kids get a little bit older, it's important to give them chores. For example, I have a grandson who is now 7. I was in America and he's not required to do a whole lot of chores. And so, of course, me being the daring parenting grandparent that I am, I said, well, we have people coming over for a big family dinner and you need to help me sweep. And he looked at me, he said, I don't know how to sweep. I said, well, it's really easy. I'm going to show you. So we went outside, I gave him the broom, I did a little demonstration, and I said, what you need to do is sweep these leaves off of the edge of the patio. I mean, it was a very small space, very doable. He, bless his little heart, he didn't do it real well, but he did it. And I said, Sawyer, thank you so much. You did a great job, and look at how you helped. And if you could help me with this, I'd appreciate it. And it was carrying something back in. As soon as his mom got home, he said, Mom, guess what I did? I helped sweep for the Thanksgiving dinner. And I did tell my daughter, I think it would be wise for him to start doing more chores, because this is what gives children a sense of self. If they have everything done for them, they don't have a feeling of any kind of accomplishment. So it's a long answer to a short question. I think starting out with chores and responsibility that kids do not get paid for, and sometimes they're not fun, and do make them age appropriate. You're not going to ask a one-year-old to try to run a vacuum cleaner. Another question that was posed to us is, how do you know the difference between what's typical teenage angst or moodiness and what's real depression? And here's what I would say, and what I've learned from psychiatrists through the years, the way you can tell the difference is the length of time that it lasts. Most kids in their teenage and adolescent years will be up and down emotionally. It's just part of the territory. It comes with the hormones. However, if your child is crying, acting out with anger, being moody, irritable for more than 2 weeks, then you've got some kind of an issue going on. Whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's drug or alcohol abuse, something is going on. And one thing I will say, moms, if something feels wrong in your gut, it's wrong, and you can trust that. We know our kids better than anybody. So when something seems off in your child, pay attention to that intuition, because your intuition is one of the best indicators that something is going on with your child. Another question that we got, and this kind of ties into the self-esteem, is, are we hurting children by praising them too much for kind of ordinary activities? Like, oh, Johnny, you're such a good boy. You ate all your vegetables. Yes, I think this is a problem. I mean, that's a normal thing to do. It's like, great, glad you finished your vegetables. Now you can have a biscuit. But not that you're so fabulous that you did this one little thing. When kids do something for the first time, I think when they do something extraordinary, we want to celebrate that. We want to reward that. But to just sort of throw out platitudes in an effort to build up your child's self-esteem, I think is truly counterproductive. What makes kids feel good is accomplishing something. Even if it's small, we all have to be working towards something. We have feel like we have to accomplish something, whether it's in our marriage, whether it's in school, whether it's at work, whether it's in our relationships with our children. We always need to feel a sense of production and accomplishment. Here's another question we got, and I've faced this one myself. I'm a recovering drug addict and alcoholic with 30 years of sobriety. And so my children, I was sober when my children were born. One of the questions was, how much do you reveal to your children about your alcohol and your drug use? It's a great question, and there are differing schools of thought on this. With my children, I began to tell them very young, we have a disease in our family, and there are a lot of people that got it, and it's called alcoholism, and it means that we can't drink alcohol like normal people. So that's why mommy doesn't have alcohol in the house. And then as they got older, I explained a little bit more. Now, here's a mistake that I did make, and I discovered this after both of my kids had started smoking weed. They said, you scared us to death about alcohol, but you really didn't say anything about smoking weed. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So because I had put so much emphasis on the drinking, they stayed away from alcohol, but they loved to smoke weed. Now, I'll be happy to divulge later how we got around some of those issues. But the good news is my kids were willing to tell me, this is where you failed as a parent. And I also told my children, all drinking isn't bad. All of my drinking wasn't bad. But when it got bad and I couldn't control it and I couldn't stop, I hurt myself and I hurt other people. Now, there's also another school of thought is you don't tell your children about any of your drug use because somehow they see it as tacit permission to use drugs. I think the parents just have to go with what they think is best and what the dynamics of the family already are. The dynamics in our family, everything was very, very, very open and no subject was off limits. All of this, of course, and I want to stress, was age appropriate. And I do think if children have grown up and they've seen you drink and they've seen you have trouble with alcohol or drugs, and they know something's wrong, then I think it's fair to say, mommy or daddy doesn't drink that drink anymore because it's like a medicine that makes me sick and I can't drink it. And then once again, you adjust age appropriately because it is very scary for children of alcoholics, no matter how old they are, they know something is off. And believe me, we think our kids don't pay attention. They know so much more of what's going on, and a lot of it can even be based just in feelings. And in alcoholic families, the children are often required to grow up too fast. They're required to be the parent. They're the ones that have to make sure mom gets to bed or dad has his food on time so that he doesn't get angry. So there's a lot that is to be considered, and I think alcoholism can be looked at very clearly as a family disease. Even when the person has stopped drinking, it does impact the family, and I think it's wise to take a look at that. My name is Lisa Henderson, and I'm the host of Daring Parenting. I'd like to invite you to go to our Facebook page and also daringparenting.com. You can get statistics there. You can learn more. There's some MP3 samples of interviews that I've done on a show that I used to have called Teens Talk Truth. And that was also a show for parents, specifically parents of teenagers. What we're going to do in Daring Parenting is we're going to talk about consequences. Keeping consequences in place. It's one of the hardest things to do. You give a consequence to your child, and then they're so good and they're so slick. And I don't care how old they are, when they look at you with those eyes and they're like, Mommy, please. Or when they get a little bit older, oh, Mom, I've been doing great. We have to, as parents, for their security, keep the boundaries intact. Yes, it's tempting to slip. Yes, it's tempting to expand or to change the consequence or the boundary. We have to be strong and not do it. If it means we have to pick up the phone and call a friend and say, I want to give in so badly. Just like with anything that's tough for you, you need support on the front end until it becomes a habit. One of the very best books that I've ever read on Natural and Logical Consequences is a book called Children, the Challenge, and it's by Rudolf Dreiker, Dreikur. And they talk in there about how to remove yourself when your children are angry or having a temper tantrum, and also how to give natural and logical consequences. And they start by explaining to you how to do it very, very young. And my parents were extremely strict, but they were rigid, and they were spankers, and they were, we're the parents and you're the child and we know best. All it made me do was to become afraid of them. And some of the strict boundaries that I got were great. The rigid ones that didn't make sense, I didn't like. So the bottom line is, I didn't know how to parent. So I set about learning how to be a parent. And a lot of my information came from people who were not parents, but who were brilliant with parenting. And some of those were people who were parenting experts, some were psychotherapists, some were psychiatrists, and some were other moms. But I didn't automatically get all of this. But one thing I did get and I did understand is that boundaries make your child feel safe. And that is the most important thing we can do as parents, is to make our children feel safe growing up. And then as they get older, the most important thing we can do is teach them how to live independently of us. Seriously, if our children are financially dependent on us in any way, we still have some leverage as parents. We have also the leverage to say, no, I'm done. I'm not paying for that. You need to get a job. You need to get up and do something. Whatever it is, we need to empower our children to be independent. And this one, of course, I learned the hard way, just like everything. I did not do that enough with my daughter. She was much more dependent than my son, who was 6 years younger than she. You know, we're all learning as parents. And the bottom line is, in the movie The Father of the Bride, and Steve Martin does something that kind of messes the kid up. He thinks it's messed the kid up. And the kid looks at him and he goes, Dad, no permanent damage. So for most of what we've done as parents, there is no permanent damage. So the best we can do, love ourselves, be gentle with ourselves, but also be firm with ourselves and with our kids. We always take your questions if you want to write me at lisa@daringparenting.com, or if you'd like to look up on the Facebook page and you can send a private message there. Any questions you have, any thoughts, anyone that you would like to hear interviewed, or if you'd like to be on the program, we'd love to hear from you. I've met a mom recently, and she has 3 grown-ish young adult daughters. And I asked her, what, your kids seem very well adjusted. What was it that you did in your family? And she's going to tell us a little bit about some of the rituals they had as the kids were small, and then as they got to adolescence, and then now as young adults.